So is there a way to demonstrate it for a patient to experience it? Let's call it in an infomercial way.
Well, you're doing it by just moving your finger back and forth.
What Dr. Pat Hopkins is trying to demonstrate is how eye movements can treat trauma.
And I've been practicing flickering my eyes.
Oh, I thought there was just something in your eye.
Welcome to The Genius of Wellness, a podcast brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare. Learn more at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. It sounds funny, but treating trauma may be the toughest fight of your life. Talk therapy helps to a point, but so do the acronyms EMDR and EFT, which have helped returning war veterans with PTSD reframe their traumas and start to heal.
What I find interesting in my practice is discovering where the trauma is in childhood and those that did not recover from childhood trauma. So we all have moments, you know, I got lost coming home from school, or there was almost an accident. We all live through that with our children, with ourselves, but we have a steady ship at home that we land on. And I think what is so difficult for so many people, and it's quite honestly epidemic at this point, is how many people never felt they had a safe ship to bring them into shore.
Well, the two of us are interested in how to deal with past traumas, and we're joined now by two specialists in PTSD who use techniques ranging from EMDR and energy psychology. They're Candace Porter, a psychologist, and Pam Glass, a social worker, who both work at Mass Bay Counseling of Quincy in Massachusetts. Hi, Candace and Pam.
Hi, Ted and Pat.
Is it necessary to reframe past traumas in order to live a healthier life as an adult, or can we just stuff it and ignore it? Candace?
No, we cannot stuff it and ignore it, because it will come back to bite you eventually. And that's one of the things that we see a lot where people have had traumatic experiences. They just bury it, and then they have another traumatic experience. They bury that, and then they wake up one day and say, I can't go to work. I have, you know, overwhelming anxiety. They don't even know how to connect it to the things that have happened. But if we don't treat trauma and clear it out of our system, it just sits there and ferments and gets worse and worse, and it impedes our functioning.
Pam, what do you think?
Well, I agree with what Candace is saying. A lot of people avoid conflict, avoid trauma, they bury it, but eventually it comes out. I always say it comes out when you're not looking. So, and that's when people end up at our doorstep, because sometimes they're confused. Something that happened a long time ago, they don't understand why it's still bothering them today.
Pam, why don't you give us an example?
I remember a long time ago, I had this man who came to see me. He was a salesman, and he had never believed in therapy before, never thought that he needed to come speak to someone. But he had gone to his boss's mother's funeral, and he only went because he felt it was an obligation. And at this funeral, a stranger who he didn't know, he started crying. It really scared him. He was confused. He was embarrassed. He had no idea. And that's what led him to my office. When I started to get a history, he told me that when he was 6 years old, his mother died. And he had a brother who was 8. And his father, who happened to be in the military, said to both his brother and my client, "She's dead. We don't talk about it." All right. So this poor 6-year-old had to bury the feelings of losing his mother at such a young age. And he did. And he didn't know how to deal with it. And it wasn't till some stranger's funeral, probably 30 years later, that all those feelings, all those buried feelings came out. So basically what we had to do was we had to do grief therapy with a man who was 46, just like I was doing it with a 6-year-old. You know, the pain and the anger and the confusion of having buried all those feelings all those years finally came out.
Society really doesn't encourage us to come out from the darkness to talk about past traumas.
I totally agree with you. Matter of fact, we think of a healthy person as a person who doesn't express feelings and everything goes well, and on the outside everything seems okay, and none of us have that kind of life. Everybody has emotions, intense experiences, and people have to learn to get them out.
Candace, why don't you talk about how you employ energy psychology and what's called EFT, which is emotional freedom techniques.
Energy psychology is a treatment tool that uses quantum physics psychology, Eastern medicine, and spirituality to help balance the human energy system. Now, that sounds complicated, but it does use all those things because it's based on acupressure. You tap different parts of your body that are acupressure points, and you also do left-right brain stimulation, which is actually included in EMDR as well. And you focus on acknowledging the feeling that you have, but that you totally accept and love yourself anyway. And then that, you know, you can change this, you can heal, you can move on. And so you're not trying to say a positive affirmation when your body knows that you don't really feel that way. You're acknowledging the emotion, but you're going through this whole tapping, this whole body experience, and rating how strong the emotion is to begin with. And as you tap, little by little, the emotion goes down. And people are amazed. They think, oh, I didn't think this was going to work. And then they say, gee, I don't feel a 10. I feel like a 6. Then we do it again, and they say, oh, my God, it's a 3. I just can't conjure up the feeling anymore. And these are the things that we experience all the time in our office.
This is different from EMDR, but let's dive into EMDR, because that also is reframing past traumas. During that course of treatment, you are asking the patient to relive that trauma before you can help them reframe it.
EMDR was actually observed and discovered by this very brilliant psychologist. Her name was Francine Shapiro. In around 1979, she was actually diagnosed with cancer. During those years, there really wasn't that much known about a mind-body connection, but she was very intrigued about saying, you know, I have this condition, it's very scary, I need to learn to adjust to it. But she wondered whether the anxiety that she was feeling was going to complicate her condition or in general, many other mental health conditions and many medical conditions. So she did a lot of research over the next 8 to 10 years because she wanted to find out how stress contributed to physical illnesses. So in 1989, she did this kind of weird experiment on herself. She was a fellow at the Mental Research Institute in Palo Alto, and she was just walking around and thinking about something that was disturbing to her. And she just really had this nagging negative thought that she just couldn't stop. But then she noticed that her eyes just spontaneously started moving back and forth, making rapid, repetitive movements from left to right. The more she noticed that, she noticed that the disturbing thought seemed to shift and didn't seem to bother her so much. And she really became intrigued. The EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, it uses rapid eye movements, which we do when we're sleeping, when we're dreaming. And really, dreams and nightmares are really our subconscious mind trying to help us to resolve unresolved issues from our waking stages. So I think Francine was intrigued by this, and her way of thinking was, well, gee, if dreams and nightmares really help us to try to resolve unresolved issues, why do we have to wait to go to sleep to do this? Why can't we try to replicate this process during our waking stages?
That's one of the theories of how it works, because truly we don't know exactly how it works.
Mm-hmm. Candace, since we don't know truly how it works, it opens the door to skeptics who think mm-hmm. this is just a hodgepodge of some touchy-feely way of dealing with emotions. How do you address that?
I'm glad you asked that, Ted, because that's something that I prepared to explain very clearly. With EFT, we think that the amygdala, the part of the brain that has to do with fight or flight and strong emotions, is actually desensitized, and they're doing MRI studies and things like that with that. But since we don't know exactly how it works, we do have over 100 studies of EFT and energy psychology alone, of which 43 of them have been randomized trials. And randomized trials are pretty scientific. They're pretty hard to fool. And out of all of those studies, 98% of them have a statistically significant result in improvement in emotion, improvement in mood, clearing of the trauma. I could go on and on about the science behind it, but I think the 100 studies definitely means that we can call this an evidence-based treatment.
So Candace, knowing that it's an evidence-based treatment, when a patient is dealing with this, whether it's EFT or EMDR, is the patient changing something mentally, or is it much deeper and it's changing them physically inside their bodies to reframe this trauma?
I think it probably functions on both levels,
right?
Because I had a client once who screamed really loud when she almost got raped, and then her voice was never the same. And 40 years later, we cleared the trauma and her voice got stronger. So when we reframed that her voice saved her life, instead of having a voice problem that no doctors seem to be able to solve, her voice got stronger and she started doing more presentations, so it affected her body as well.
Why isn't this standard therapy that's introduced as part of any therapist's course of study?
That is a very good question. I just quickly want to say that the American Psychological Association has a paradigm, and basically that's cognitive therapy. And they, for years, have seen the results of these studies. They accept EMDR more because it was developed by a psychologist. But even though EFT was developed by psychologists, also developed by other creative people, we're having a tough time changing the paradigm. In Europe, it's starting to be taught in graduate school. But right now, psychologists can't even get credit for trainings in EFT. They can get the credits for training, but only in the introductory phases of it. So it's a new paradigm. And science tends to validate what it already knows and is skeptical of what it does not know yet. And that's the problem.
Hi, it's Ted. Taking a second to remind you that The Genius of Wellness is your place for interesting podcasts, tips for living a healthier life, and doctors who provide a personalized approach to healthcare. You can find it all, plus schedule an appointment at thegeniusofwellness.org. Now back to our conversation. Let's take a deep dive in a session. Can you actually put us in the seat and make us feel like we're there? Candace?
I can tell a good story about a client. This was a father whose son had OD'd and died from a drug overdose. He had actually stopped his business for a year and followed his kid around every second to try to save his life and try to keep him from using drugs, and he couldn't. But when his son died, he blamed himself, and he was depressed. He couldn't snap out of it. This was a guy who had a very down-to-earth type of job, wasn't a super intellectual kind of guy. And when he first came in, he said, "Well, I don't see how you can help me. My son is dead, and there's nothing you can do to bring him back." And I explained that I could help him deal with what had happened. So we sat down, and we did a combination of energy therapy and EMDR. And his big thing was he blamed himself. That was the thought form that was holding him hostage through the whole experience. There's a way in EMDR where if you just say to somebody, "Oh, but what about this and what about that?" the person says, "Yeah, but..." But when they do EMDR or energy therapy, they're in control of their own thoughts and feelings. And when the healing thoughts start to come to them through the left brain stimulation, through the tapping, which helps the brain to process, when they come up with their own insight, that's much more powerful, and it really makes a big difference. So he went through all the things he had done and how hard he tried, and then, you know, we have a way of trying to instill new thoughts and things, and we did that, and he went through all the things he had done to save his son, and he realized, I could see his face change, and suddenly he was like, "Oh my God, I did do everything I possibly could have done." And so he opened his eyes and he said to me, "Is the sky bluer than it was before we walked in here?" He was laughing, he was smiling. Pam and I both see this all the time. He let go of that guilt, which there's no way with cognitive therapy that you can talk somebody out of it, because no matter how much you say, "What's the evidence?" and it's all intellectual. This is a whole body experience where by using these different tools, he saw it, he felt it, he experienced it. And from that point on, he wasn't depressed. He changed a lot of things in his life and he got his life back. That's just one. We could tell you hundreds of experiences like this that are dramatic, where the person's lets go of negative emotions and then they heal.
Can you help us visualize what specifically this person, where did he go consciously that allowed him to let go of some of that guilt?
Well, one of the things about EMDR is all you do is process for the first half an hour to an hour. And you just, each time the person says something about what they're thinking about, you say, "Go with that." And then you turn the machine or the light machine or the stimulator or whatever it is that's going left and right, and you say, focus on that. So you're not interrupting it when the person says, it's all my fault, my son is not here now because I screwed up and I didn't know how to handle this and I made mistakes. And you just say, go with that. And then the person with the stimulation is able to follow their own thinking process for a long time. They get a lot of negative stuff out. They say it over and over again. It's all my fault. This is what I did. And then usually during that time, they give you little hints of things that you might be able to get them to think about it differently, but you introduce it in very sneaky ways. Like you say, well, I'm a little confused. On one hand, you say that you didn't do enough, but it sounds like you sacrificed your entire job and income and everything for like 2 years straight. Go with that. Then they quietly have to focus on that while the stimulation is going on. And when they come back, they say, wow, yeah, maybe I did do everything. So it's something about the structure of how it's set up. You don't interrupt right away and say, wait a minute, well, how can you blame yourself, which you would normally do in a cognitive situation.
Well, I'm going to ask you to drill down even further. Stay with me on this.
Okay.
What part of the technique, the eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, what part of that technique made it change?
Well, I think it's processing. When you talk to someone, they're still stuck in their thought. And when you suggest it to them, they're stuck in their thought. And when you give them evidence why they're stuck in their thought, there's something about the stimulation of the techniques that creates a situation for them to move to the next thought themselves. And I do think it's the tapping and the left-right brain stimulation.
So is there a way to demonstrate it for a patient to experience it in a, let's call it, in an infomercial way? If I were to, I'm doing it on Ted right now, I'm seeing if I can get him to.
Well, you're doing it by just moving your finger back and forth.
And I've been practicing flickering my eyes.
Well, I thought there was just something in your eye.
It's easier to do with EFT because within a minute or two, you can feel a difference sometimes. EMDR really is much more complicated, and it takes time because the brain is slowly taking in each step itself, and it isn't like an instant response. EFT is quicker. I had a young girl in here who was with her mom yesterday, and she was so anxious she couldn't sit in the waiting room. So I said to my client, why don't we bring her in and do a little tapping? And within 3 minutes, she went from a 10 to a 6 on her anxiety, and she was able to sit outside with her little earbuds and do her homework. So one is more dramatic than the other in terms of time, but there are some things that EMDR does really well that EFT isn't as good, and that's why we use both techniques.
So we've talked about the process of a patient going in for EMDR. How does EFT differ when a patient comes and sits across from you?
It's more like a choice. When I present to them that I do energy therapy, I include EMDR, even though technically it's not considered an energy therapy. I tell them that I have different skills that I can offer, and then I explain how they both work, and I teach them to the client, and I use them interchangeably.
But is there a device that you use for EFT the way that there is a device for EMDR?
No. EFT is tapping. So you tap several places on your face, below your collarbone, under your arm, the tips of your fingers, the back of your hand with your eyes closed and open. You hum a tune, you count because you're lighting up the right brain and the left brain. So it's a combination of a lot of those things. And the beauty of it is you can do it anywhere. And I mean, when people see that it's not a medicine, their eyes light up like, oh, good, there's no side effects, I don't have to worry. So it's a skill that they can learn and go in the bathroom at work and just do it and bring their emotions down and go back to work.
It's really interesting to go deep on traumas and trying to reframe our pasts so we can live a healthier life. Candace Porter and Pam Glass, both with Mass Bay Counseling of Quincy in Massachusetts, thanks for taking the time and sharing your specialty with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pat, for being so open-minded and helping us to spread the word about these new techniques.
And thank you for listening to The Genius of Wellness. If you like our podcast, do us a favor. Share it with your friends and family and write a review on this podcast channel. It'll help more people find us. The Genius of Wellness is brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare. Learn more at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. See you next time.